Welcome to Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, where you'll get a sneak peek into stories and lives behind the authors, entertainers, and celebrities that you love to read about. Sit back, relax, and let Lisa and her guests entertain you. Now, here's your host, Lisa.
Good morning. This is Lisa from Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, and we are here today with Ellen Paul. She is an author of over 12 novels, and we are just dialing her in right now. Good morning, Ellen. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Yes, I can. Thank you, Lisa.
Sorry about trying to dial you a minute ago there. Yeah, that happens. It's part of life. Well, how are you, and where am I calling to? Where are you at right now? Are you in New York or are you in California?
I am in New York, and I am sitting at my desk. Not my writing desk. Not allowed to sit there unless I'm writing, but at what I think of as my scut work desk. It's covered with bills and calendars and so on.
Oh, that's funny. I think every writer has that. Like, how many areas do you use for writing? Do you really just use just the one area, and then, of course, outdoor cafes, that kind of thing? But do you have more than one place in your place that you use?
I don't really. I used to write in, like, jury waiting rooms, all kinds of random places. But I have a very nice office, and at one end there's a view and lots of sunlight, and the other end, the punishment end, I have no view and not much light. So sitting at the writing desk is a treat.
Well, you have written a very good book called Must Read Well, and I want to get this in my store, so if I can get some copies and then have you sign them, and then we'll ship them back to the store. I'm sure we'll have people. I'd love it, people.
You can write your name.
Yeah. My last author, they stuck recipe cards in their book because it fit the story. Maybe you have something in your story that you know, that would reflect off a part or a chapter, and she always put hers in at page 27. So it's kind of neat. You know, I had people last night that literally were just going to buy the book just because of the recipe card. So it's a good little
flag. Yeah, I like that. So. I'll have to think hard. I don't think anyone really wants my recipes, but maybe something else that works with the theme of the story.
Well, sure. So tell us about these two characters that you've hooked up together. First, I want to ask, are you like me? I absolutely love old people. Like, my husband will say, you know, I'm just like a magnet to them. You know, they come into my store all day long, and they have so much wisdom, and they have so many neat stories. And, you know, I think a lot of the young people don't realize how much they know, and they kind of let you kind of go on. I'll tell you a story. A lady the other day, she came in and she said, you know, I told him there's a cockroach in the kitchen, and so he went and scrubbed the whole room top to bottom, and he just didn't want to be eating after a cockroach. Well, the next day, I put the cockroach in the bathroom, and she just kind of isn't that awesome?
That's so funny.
She gave me a little snarky wink, you know, and
right.
Us women need all the help we can, don't we?
A little wild.
She was from the New York area, I think, so blessings to New York there. But tell me a little bit about Liz and Anne that you've got in your story, Liz being Liz Miller, the younger of the two, and Anne being the elderly lady. Who has a special assignment.
Mm-hmm. Well, Liz is actually 60 years younger than Anne. Liz is 29 and Anne is 89. So there's a very wide gap between them. I enjoyed that kind of... I enjoyed it mostly because Anne, 89 though she is, as you say, knows a heck of a lot. She's sharp as a tack, and she's not a bad match at all for a PhD candidate, which is what Liz is right now. I will admit or explain that I'm 70 now myself, and I'm getting to know from experience that even women or men don't become fluffy, nice people. They might mellow a bit and learn something, not to judge people or not to lash out, maybe, but they don't become the kind of dear, vulnerable, I mean, physically maybe vulnerable, but they are still who they were, I think. And when I turned 70, a friend reminded me that in a romance language like France, you don't say, I am 70, you say, I have 70 years. That's how it's said. And she said, so you have all those years inside of you, when you were 16, when you were 20, when, you know. And I love looking at it that way. And I still have my 29-year-old. So Liz and I connected very easily.
Very cool. And tell us a little bit about the ad. Did you want to read an excerpt? I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you have an excerpt that you'd like to read, or do you want to just flow with the interview here?
I did pick out a little excerpt, and it doesn't explain about the ad, although I could find that. It is through an ad that that Liz finds this elderly lady, Anne, and Liz has been trying to connect with that lady for 4 years because she was a famous writer long ago, and Liz is trying to finish her dissertation, which involves and what effect it had on women almost worldwide because it was a huge bestseller. Liz believes that it contributed to the empowerment of women in the early 1960s, which is not the reputation the book has had. It was just known as a popular novel. So she's been trying to connect with her, and Anne has been not interested. Anne doesn't trust her, and she doesn't need her. And so this ad, which is the coincidence that kicks off the book, and it's, I'm happy to say, it's the only coincidence in the book. So I don't feel that it was cheap, but Liz has just been ditched by her boyfriend. She lived with him, and she's now staying at a friend's, and she comes across this Craigslist ad entirely by chance. And I'll read just a little bit before that happened. She's sitting in the kitchen with her friend. Her friend offers her French toast, but she's not interested. She's not hungry. She's so depressed by all the ads for places that she can't possibly afford. She has a huge mountain of student debt. So her friend makes the French toast anyway, puts it in front of her, and Liz just eats it. And then she says, her friend was washing the dishes when I reopened my laptop, where she's been looking at Craigslist, and saw the miraculous ad that transformed February into May. It's the cold, cold, chilly world of February. And here is the ad. Private room and bath with river view in pre-war doorman Greenwich Village building. Kitchen privileges available now. Advantageous terms for quiet female willing to read aloud to purblind landlady, 1 hour a day. Reply with brief work and educational details to atw1301922@juno.com. Must read well. Must read well? A shiver ran through me, and so on, because she recognizes right away this is her quarry. This is the woman she's been after for so long, and there are clues in the ad which she explains. So that's a key turning point, and it's on page 2, so I'm not giving anything away.
Well, that will make people want to get the book, and I hope you're not the kind of person that comes in and just reads that little blurb and leaves. I want you to buy the book and get that full experience. Yeah. Well,
yes,
you get a lot
you.
Of people that are, you know, just looking in. The cover's nice. You've got a great cover on the book. It's intriguing, and it does pull you in, the blurb. And let me ask you, because blurb writing is such a skill. I mean, they actually have people you can hire to do blurbs. Did you get to write the blurb for this, or who wrote the blurb for your book?
Oh, do you mean the synopsis that explains the book, and, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
without giving it away?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Yes, mm-hmm. I did not. I'm thrilled to say I would be terrible at that. And who wrote it was really my agent. It got a little refined as time went along, but it almost is exactly as my agent, God bless him. His name is Murray Weiss, and he's been wonderful. And he's the person that sold the book, and he knows how to sell a book. So I think the synopsis, which is, you know, not only on the book but also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and so on, has worked really well because it is, I don't know, without undue modesty, it's been described as a page-turner, hard to put down by critics, and that is my goal. I want an absorbing novel that doesn't let go of you, where you really want to know what happens next.
In comparison to your other books that you've written, how, I mean, you've written several books in a few different genres. How is this different? I mean, writing this book, how did that, what went through your head while you were writing this story in comparison to some of your other titles, more recent titles?
Well, the most recent books I had written were mysteries. And they had a very nice protagonist. I mean, she was witty and clever, and she's a writer. And if I hadn't written those, I don't think I could have written this book, because I learned doing that you, when you write a suspenseful book, you owe it to the reader to tell them enough as you go along so that they can follow the breadcrumbs, but not so much that the fun of finding out what happens next and how it ends goes away. You want both. You want to play fair with the reader, but you don't want to give everything away. So learning that was very helpful. But this book is really different in the sense that the narrator is, we want her to succeed, but she's not the nicest person in the world right now. She's a desperate person. And she's driven to do things that are not as, well, they're just plain not honest. And I don't think I've ever had a narrator like that. I actually, when she started, she was out and out scoundrel. So she got nicer as revisions went along. So because you don't want to spend time with somebody who's just not likable. But that was really new for me. I didn't have any protagonists who were anything other than very sympathetic and that you could relate to easily. This person you can relate to, but not with the best part of yourself, probably.
Would you, you know, often authors talk about how they're writing, and I'm sure many of them are right now engrossed in writing a NaNoWriMo book for the month of November where you...
I've done that.
I don't know. I have as well. I failed twice.
Oh, cool.
I actually succeeded. It's fun, though, isn't it? I mean, you don't get any... For anybody that doesn't know, go to NaNoWriMo.org. It's just where you write a novel, and maybe you've been dying to write a story your whole life, and this just kind of gives you a chance to do it either with friends or people that you meet through NaNoWriMo or just on your own. It just gives you a time frame that says it's okay to just take this little bit of time to write your story. Just try it. I really do suggest people do it because it is life-changing, and as you found, it's fun to succeed. And but when you're writing, do you find that, like, certain characters, well, especially this book, they start taking over your story, and is that how your characters, you know, became grumpy or mean or however, you know, pulling apart? Like, at what point did you say, you've had enough to say, now I'm changing you? Like, because I've had that happen when I write. Like, this isn't who you were supposed to be. And, you know, so what happens with you when you write? You know, like, I have to go back and edit it out, or they literally do take over a story. So how do you keep your characters from being that way?
I think that's true for me, too. I didn't know in the beginning that the energy that Liz pours out into the narration was going to be there, and I didn't know before I started that her elderly writer quarry was going to be as sharp as she is and as observant. So both of them revealed themselves to me, and they started in a very different place. The whole book started in a very different place. It started as a kind of Dickensian book with, a, I don't know, 20 different characters whose lives were all supposed to intersect. And at a certain point, I had no idea what I was doing. It was so complicated. Mm-hmm. And these two characters were in it. Liz's student wasn't really who she ended up being at all. In the beginning, she really was just this young woman who had left college without finishing and didn't know what to do with herself. And Anne, the elderly writer, wanted to revisit parts of her journal but couldn't read them. And that was really the beginning of the book. That was an idea I had like 10 years, 5 years before I started, that how poignant it would be if you lost enough vision, if your vision was damaged enough as you were, got old, that you couldn't read your own journals and would have to find somebody to read them out loud to you. Who would you choose? Quandary, that, to me, terrible predicament, is what triggered the story in my head. But the reader changed a lot as it went along, and this whole connection that brings her to Anne, totally unanticipated by me. That just happened. Also, I got rid of like 90% of the story. I just kept these two characters out of the 20, thankfully, because it was a mess. I thought I had a poltergeist. The pages didn't seem to be in the same order that I left them in the night. So, it was really out of hand.
Well, you can use that for your next book, you know. Do you think another story? Yeah, I mean, do you think you'll do a prequel to this book at some point? Or, I don't know if there'd be a sequel, but who knows? You know, what do you think?
Well, I'd say who knows, because I don't know. I just finally had time yesterday to sit down and try to think of a new book, because I have been doing interviews and writing essays and Q&As and so on to try to bring attention to this book for quite a while, and I wasn't able to do both. Maybe some people can. So I've been missing writing. I was allowed to sit at my writing desk this week and really just listen for whatever might be out there. And I don't have a clue right now. So, but that's the way books start for me sometimes.
It sounds like you keep your notes for quite a while. I have so many. My husband finally went and bought me a card catalog.
Yes, my walls are covered with bulletin boards. I think there are 5 very large ones, and those are covered with ideas, little bits of dialogue, characters I thought, might work, situations, and so on. And I do look at those and now and then and think, yeah, that'd be pretty good. But right now I haven't found any that said, this would be so rich. Go for this. I'm still feeling my way. They've been there an awfully long time. It took 5 years to write this book.
That's a long time. But, by doing that, you also were, like you said, able to eliminate those other characters and kept the focus on, what was that one movie that had Sandra Bullock in it? And it was like 2 characters through the whole movie, or 3 or whatever it was. It was not that many. And I thought, how is this going to work with just nothing going on? It was really a good movie. I actually really liked it. Of course, you have good actors in there. So, but I mean, the story's, I know you'll come up with another good story you've written.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk about... Yeah, you've got a great book here, and I'd love to hear your excerpt if you're ready, and we'll get that on the air for people to want to come in and pick that book up. And also, before you do that, now they can go to Bancroft Press. They'll be able to come to Peacock Books in Rochester, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, probably any retailer if they, set up through Ingram's. And is there anywhere else that they can get the book? Can they buy direct from you or with a signed note or anything?
No, I am not. I don't do that. But I have, the books, thankfully, are on Amazon, Apple Books.
Mm-hmm. Apple, sorry about that. Yeah, I forgot them. So.
And also there's something called bookshop.org, which connects you with small independent bookshops. And
mm-hmm.
I like that because many people are, you know, prefer to buy from a local bookstore. And you do have to pay the shipping, and they usually don't have any discounts, but you can. And also it's available as an e-book and as an Audible book. So I'm very pleased about that.
Audible book
available.
Is great.
Oh, did you listen to some of it?
Well,
no,
I just listened to the clip. But how do you find your audio book narrator? Did your publisher find that, your agent,
My
or do you get a say
did.
In that?
Mm-hmm. No, it was just his listening and making a good choice. She did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Well, you're in New York. You probably can find an actor or actress just about anywhere in your one block area.
Uh-huh. and several writers.
Yeah, I am sure about that.
That's very
How
true.
Has COVID affected you with writing, like not getting out? I mean, you guys were hit so hard. We sat here waiting for that wave, and I don't know if it was worse knowing it was coming or, you know, worse when it got here.
Interesting. Well, we were very lucky. My husband and I were out in L.A. He was teaching at UCLA, which he does annually. And so we were already out there, and we were able to just stay there for a while New York went through hell. This was the very beginning of it. And in L.A., you get in your car and go somewhere. And we actually took advantage of it to take long drives that would have taken, you know, an hour and a half in traffic. There was no traffic. So we were lucky, and when we came home, it wasn't over. I lost a friend. It was awful, awful. But it was much easier to know what to do, to stay well. The vaccine came along, and it was, you know, we were spared a lot. And, of course, I could write. It didn't matter. I write at home anyway. So so that was fortunate. My husband, his office shut down, and he was here. And to my amazement, we didn't get on each other's nerves to speak of at all.
You know, the pandemic did that to a lot of people. You know, like they just had to, they knew they had to get along, so they just did. And I've seen that out in the wild, like with different animals. It's like, okay, you're both cornered by whatever is over here. And they just,
I love
they
that.
Do, they just, yeah, they honestly
they team
do.
Up.
And like, yeah, in the winter, I did one book, it was on insects in the winter. And so I found like 300 different insects that I would literally find three or four, like a spider and like little flies, and I can't even identify half of the things. But they're all sitting on a leaf together. It's 40 below zero, and I'm like, wow, why aren't you eating that guy? You know,
that is fascinating.
It's still one of my best documentaries. I pull it out every fall, and everybody wants the original book. And of course, I sold that out years ago, so I'm putting out a new one. And it was at the Eagle
Center.
Insects are interesting. I've always had kind of an interest in studying them. And
My friend since fourth grade is an entomologist. And it's very good to know an entomologist. If you're going to the country and there are ticks, you can call and ask, what can I do that won't harm my dog? And other things like that.
Get an opossum. That's what you do. If you have ticks, you get an opossum. They eat ticks. Thousands
of them. Interesting. I've never considered that option. We've used cedar oil.
It's not like you want to carry a possum around either, but...
Well, true. And they may be scarce in New York City.
Yeah,
hard to get rid hold of.
I'll tell you, your writing is tight. It's interesting. The characters are. I like flawed characters, by the way. Unreliable narrators. I love things that lead you one way, and at the end, you know, because everything has become not everything, but a lot of things have become. Oh, I already know the ending, and you know, you get to your age or my age, and you go, oh, I've already seen this like a million times. What can I do that's new?
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. And I mean, I think there's comfort in knowing where a book's going to end. Certainly every Regency romance I wrote in the beginning of my career under the name Fiona Hill Well, you know where that's going to end. Not a big surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's going
to
get married.
Right?
Right. It's like Jane Austen. But I don't mind comfort reading at all, but I do like mysteries and I do like suspense. And I mean, this isn't a suspenseful novel where you're praying somebody doesn't kill somebody. It's more subtle than that. And I don't think I would want to write or even read a book that was so suspenseful that you were uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah, and it's really, it's like delving into their minds so deep that you can, you don't know who's going to be the winner in the end. Is, I guess I'm trying not to give it away.
Thank you.
But do you have a way that you write that you draw that out, or what are these things that have happened or didn't happen that you wanted to happen?
Oh, God, thank God, no. I've never been involved in anything like this.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. I don't know if people know the book The Aspirin Papers by Henry James, but I didn't realize this till I was well into it, but there's a strong similarity because it's 100 and something years old, but it involves a scholar who gets access to a very elderly lady, and he's in search of papers that she holds. And well, you can look at it two ways. You can say that I stole the skeleton of that book, but, you know, Shakespeare did that too. Or you can say that we stand on the shoulders of giants, which is a much more genteel way to look at it, but also true.
Well, Ellen, we're running out of time here, and I don't want to lose you getting a chance to read your excerpt. I got about 3 minutes here.
Okay.
Juan, I'm going to I'll let you close out with your excerpt,
and I'll
jump back on to say goodbye.
Okay. Stop me if it gets
Thanks
too
for
long.
Being my guest.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm going to read just the first time that Liz, the scholar, gets to meet Anne, her quarry. And of course, is 89. So for a few seconds, she says, I simply stared at her, overcome by my thirst to take her in. So many years had gone by since the time the last photo I'd seen of her had been taken. It was one of a flurry of pictures that appeared in the many articles provoked by the success of her book, Vengeance, which is The Vengeance of Catherine Clark. That was her big book. The Anne Tausig Weil, the author of those articles, like the one on her long-ago book jackets, was a severely beautiful woman with dark, blunt-cut, shoulder-length hair and thick bangs that brushed the black brows over her bold, hooded eyes. Now I faced a tall, very thin, very old lady wearing a white silk blouse, a cream-colored cashmere cardigan, and loose crepe pants. Aged though she was not without beauty. The silver hair that hung to her shoulders differed only in color from the hair of the woman in the publicity pictures. She still had the same high cheekbones and the elegant hollows, albeit no longer unlined, that accompanied them. Her posture was remarkable for a person of any age. It must have been the work of a lifetime. But her mouth had collapsed. Her lips showed no trace of the fullness they once had, and the flesh above them was deeply corrugated. Her chin had lost its definition, her neck its ivory smoothness. The eyes behind heavy tortoiseshell glasses retained some of their youthful, sharp challenge, but their color had faded from deep brown to a dull amber. All the same, the remnants of her youth caught the eye at least as much as the passage of years. She put me in mind of a silent film actress, one long gone from the screen, but whose ghost still lives in her face, her gestures, her carriage. Even now, she looked commanding enough to have been the notorious author of a book that galvanized a generation. I'll stop there.
That is phenomenal. And if you don't pick this book up, you're going to be missing out on a story that has probably changed your life as well. Check it out. You can go to our Peacock bookstore. We'll have signed copies in there in just a couple weeks. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple. And we've been talking with Ellen Paul, the author of Must Read Well. And Ellen, thank you for being my guest today. I look forward to your next book and having you back. Have a good day. This
thank
is Lisa,
you so
your
much,
host
Lisa.
Of
This was a great pleasure
for me. Oh, you're very
welcome. Okay. Take good care.
Thank you too now. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
This is Lisa, your host of Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, and I'll be back next time with a new featured guest to continue this Walk the Talk journey. If you happen to be in the Rochester, Minnesota area, come stop by at Peacock Books. We're in the Galleria Mall at University Square, around the corner from Poppy's and Lens Crafters. Grab a bite to eat at Chester's. We've got great food, a great mall, great place to shop. And while you're at Mayo Clinic, we're just a block right across the street. You can't miss us. Peacock Books. This is Lisa, your host of Lisa's Walk the Talk Show. And if you have written a book or have an interesting life, maybe you're my next featured guest. Check it out at lisalc.live or peacockbooks.com. I'll be back next time with a new
You've
featured
guest. You've
been
listening to Lisa's Walk the Talk Show. If you're an author or entertainer and you'd like to be considered for an upcoming broadcast, log on to Lisa's Walk the Talk website at www.lisalc.com for more information. That's www.lisalc.com. Lisa will be back next week to continue this Walk the Talk journey.